I'm not giving those damn Bellagio people a dime over there. I'm going to wrap this up very nicely. That crispy duck went down very well, Lee. I'm afraid to go on that public scale. Those days are over. I'm looking sharp, Lee. I'm lean, I'm mean, and I'm ready to talk all things Buccaneers. I got my pronouns in order, and I'm ready to bedazzle our audience.
Sage, what do you do if you find mold at your business or in your home after a flood or just in general? Who do you call?
Florida's Elite Restoration. Steve, Josh and his people, they know what they're doing. Florida's Elite Restoration. If you think you got any potential mold problem, that's your first call.
Business owners, plumbers, property managers, air conditioning contractors, owner Josh Martin of Florida's Elite Restoration is ready to work with you to serve your clients honestly and efficiently in their time of need. Florida's Elite Restoration is all across the Bay Area and beyond, and owner Josh Martin spent 14 years as an insurance adjuster. He knows the game, he knows the system, he knows how to make it work for your company and for your clients. Florida's Elite Restoration. Meet with Josh. He'll get together with you and lay out how he helps great businesses like yours all across the Tampa Bay area. And homeowners, like Ira said, call Florida's Elite Restoration 24/7. Make them your first phone call. They'll come out and give you a free assessment of what's happening in your home so you don't make a huge mistake after a flood, fire, water damage, mold, or a flood. Florida'sElite Restoration.com. Yeah, yeah. Buccaneers fans, Bucks fans, we are fired up to present the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the Custodian of Canton. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. If you didn't catch the earlier episode, it is there for you at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts, all over the place. And the Sage is here. Ira, got to let you know, at Bill Curry Ford right now, another special through the end of the month at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. They're doubling the Ford bonus cash, so you can get $1,500 off your brand new vehicle. Order a new Ford Escape, an Explorer, an F-150, a Ford Edge. And of course, you can do it on their website, BillCurryFord.com. On top of that, Sean Sullivan will give you an Ira Kaufman discount, which cannot be beat. Take advantage of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Bill Curry Ford, that's the place to be.
Bill Curry Ford. I was there a few weeks ago. Service fantastic. And I believe the showroom, the revamped showroom, will be opening within a week or two. And that's going to be fantastic. Bill Curry Ford.
Big Storm Beer, you got to have dinner at Big Storm. They've got live music in Odessa off State Road 54 at their location there in Pasco County. Also at the flagship location in Clearwater, gorgeous outdoor covered patio, fully covered. Follow them at Facebook, Big Storm Orlando, Big Storm Clearwater, Big Storm Pasco. And, of course, in Cape Coral, coming soon to Ybor City. The food is fantastic, and they are Florida's very best craft beer. Big Storm Beer, the Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA. Find out where to buy it if you don't see it in your local Publix. Find out where to buy it at their website, bigstormbrewery.com. Sage, before we got on this podcast, you said, I got an opening. So, all right, Lee and I are going to clear the floor. What do you got?
I know you take issue. Umbrage, Lee. You take umbrage. There's your word for the day. When I bring stuff up, yes, yes, I'm talking about things that happened before Led Zeppelin 1 came out. But Lee, even you will have to make an exception for what I'm about to say. Gentlemen, happy 91st birthday to the best baseball player, the greatest living player, the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays, born 1931. And Lee, I don't care if he starred in the 50s and the 60s. It's Willie Mays, Lee. We got to respect that.
I never saw him play.
Well, you're over there trying to see Albert Pujols and Joe Torre at third base. You can't beat the Say Hey Kid. And Isbitz, you never saw him play either. But I will say this, and of course he finished his career as a New York Met in shambles. He dropped a ball in the World Series. Let's not remember Willie Mays from 1973. Let's remember Willie Mays from 1963. And his bits, I'll wrap this up very quickly. Steve, the man won MVP awards 11 years apart, 54 and 65. His bits, who does that?
All right. Enough of your Willie Mays rant. Happy birthday, Willie. Hope he's doing well. I think I saw him on TV a few years ago, so I don't know. But all right, Ira. Now, I know you went to school with Willie's younger sister, Ethel. You guys were tight. But Sage, how's the diet going? What's the number? Are you down 10 pounds yet?
I'm feeling outstanding. I'm using Publix scale, Lee. The same Publix and the same scale. I think that's fair because the scale in my house is like 2 pounds underweight. So I get this glow and then I go to Publix and it's 2+ pounds. Lee, I'm down about 7 or 8, Lee. I'm looking sharp. Now, my wife went to lunch at a Thai place yesterday and she brought some leftovers home. I'm afraid to say that that crispy duck went down very well, Lee. I'm afraid to go on that public scale, but I'm looking sharp, Lee. I'm lean, I'm mean, and I'm ready to talk all things Buccaneers.
Sage, I got to ask you one question before we get to the Bucs. When you go to Publix, do you still go to the bakery counter and ask for a free cookie?
They stopped doing it, Steve. They stopped doing it. Even the 5-year-olds can't get it, so I'm certainly not going to get it. But I'm not about to pass the candy display without filling my pocket over there, DeKemper. I don't care if they catch me.
Shoplifter.
All right, Sage, I got one for you out of the gate. Jamel Dean, a guy you referenced in your latest column at JoeBucksFan.com, he did a little sit-down with Buccaneers.com. He came right out and said it, which a lot of guys won't do. Jamel Dean came out and said, look, I'm taking a new approach into this year because I know it's my contract year. And Carlton Davis got a second contract, and that inspired me. And I want a second contract, and I'm doing everything I can to get that contract. So that's my goal. You know, Dean also talked about how with all the injuries last year, he had a chance to be the guy for a while, be the number one cornerback, take on a lot of those responsibilities and coverage duties. And he felt he learned a lot from that. In addition to the mentoring from Richard Sherman, he said Sherman was his favorite player when he was younger. So it was like a big, big, big deal to Dean. And apparently they talked about here that Dean in the conditioning drills appears to be the fastest Buccaneer. And of course he cranked out that 4.3 speed better than the rookie that the Bucs just drafted when he was at the Combine a few years ago. So what do you think of Dean coming right out and saying it, Ira?
Well, I give him credit for honesty. Lee, I think he speaks for Sean Murphy Bunting as well, or he should. Murphy Bunting should be thinking the same thing. They should be thinking contract. They saw what happened with Carlton Davis. If they don't get the extension with the Bucs, Lee, they hit the free agent market. They put good tape out. They'll cash in. They might not make as much as Carlton Davis, but if they have a good season, there's going to be a lot of teams interested in these guys. Now, Lee, let's talk about Jamel Dean for a minute. This guy, I think, is very funky and hard to capture. I'll say this, Lee. You know, whether you like Pro Football Focus, you and I are not particularly fans, but Pro Football Reference seems to be a down-the-line source. And, Lee, they have metrics, you know, snap counts. They have metrics for cornerbacks about when they were targeted and how many passes were completed. So, Lee, according to both of these sources, and you and I put a lot more stock, I think, in Pro Football Reference, Dean's numbers are very good. Very, very good over his 3-year career with the Bucs. But, Lee, here's what makes it so intriguing. You and I believe in the eye test, and, you know, Hall of Fame voters, we talk about it a lot. Well, what is the eye test? What did you see on... when you watch this guy play, forget about the numbers. What did you see? And Lee, I'll speak for myself. My jury's out on Jamel Dean. I'm not quite sure. Right now, I'm not throwing a lot of money on Jamel Dean. And you talk about numbers. He's got 5 career interceptions. He's played more than 40 games. He's never forced a fumble. He's just okay in run support. Yeah, he had that pick 6 against Aaron Rodgers. But Lee, over 3 years... you remember a lot of other plays Jamel Dean made. So, Lee, what's your evaluation in terms of the eye test on Jamel Dean?
They won a Super Bowl with him starting, didn't they?
They did.
That's my test. I understand what you're saying about the picks, but let's not go Lovie Smith here. If you get picks but you can't cover, what's the point? So you got to be able to cover first. And he's okay at that, maybe good. But what you're saying about both Dean and Sean Murphy bunting and contracts, this is like a main reason why I was hoping the Bucks would get a corner with their first pick, because I do not believe both Bunting and Dean will return next year. One of the two will be gone because the Bucks just don't have all the money. They just don't. And we heard this week defensive coaches saying you have to have three starting corners. So maybe this guy they got from Sam Houston State, McCollum, will be that guy. Pat Kerwin seems to be high on him. We shall see. But I know the focus here is on Bunting, on Dean. I think Dean's pretty good. You know what? Dean is kind of the opposite of Sean Murphy Bunting. Bunting gets picks, but I don't know about his coverage skills. Dean can't get a pick, but I think he's a good coverage man. So it's interesting. Those two guys are the yin and the yang.
Couple things, Sage, just for the numbers' sake. Carlton Davis only has one more career interception than Dean, and he's played an entirely additional season. So I'm not sure what we're comparing Dean to as far as hands go. And as far as the money, next year, unless something changes, I don't expect Tom Brady back. I don't expect Gronk back, assuming he plays this year. They've got some other older guys on the roster. Levante David's probably out. So I think they'll have plenty of money next year to sign free agents. I'm just not seeing where they wouldn't necessarily. Brady, even though he's not making a big salary, he still does count a tremendous amount against the cap. And I think there's reasonable that they'd have money. But is Dean better than a number two cornerback? I don't think so. But he does have the talent, and he does have the raw ability. So maybe this is the year. Todd Bowles was on with Colin Coward, and Coward asked him, "I've never seen you get mad. Do you ever get mad?" And Bowles gave his usual line, "Oh, you got to come to practice." But then he said, "No, really, who do you get mad at? When's the last time you chewed somebody out?" And Bowles thought, and he said, "Well," and then he named twice where he chewed out Jamel Dean. That was his answer, his go-to answer.
You know, hey, guys, something Nick Rapone, a friend of the program, and Lee, you heard him the other day, and it was interesting. And I think very much to the point, Lee, you know, we talk about the Bucs secondary, and they're giving up yards, and they're giving up touchdowns, and they're giving up a high completion percentage. And all that's true, Lee, but Rapone made a good point. He focuses on yards per pass attempt, and, you know, the Bucs faced the most throws, Lee, in the league last year, just like Brady. It's interesting, Lee, Brady threw more passes than any quarterback, and the Bucs faced more passes than any defense. Interesting. And he said, and Rapone said, well, mostly it's because nobody can run on the Bucs, and that's true. They've got that reputation, and well-deserved. You might as well not beat your head against the wall, Lee. You make that point all the time. If it's not working, stop doing it. So throw the ball. And Lee, he focused on yards per pass attempt. He said the Bucs finished third in the league. I don't have any reason to dispute that. That's a big category. It's a big metric for offense, and it's a big metric for defense, and it kind of goes to efficiency. So, Lee, we rag on the Bucs secondary in terms of the yards that teams are compiling, but, Lee, we got to provide perspective. And, you know, they're getting thrown on 40 times a game, Lee, so you're going to give up yards, and you're going to give up touchdowns. In that regard, maybe the secondary isn't as shabby as sometimes we make it out to be.
My issues with the secondary, believe it or not, and the secondary as a whole, isn't so much their play on the field. My issue is, number one, they had no depth last year. You know, they were talking about Ross Cockrell earlier this week. Give me a break. Anytime Dean or Bunting or Carlton Davis went down, it got lit up. They got lit up. That was my biggest problem with the secondary. And that was another reason why I wanted the cornerback so bad early. They had absolutely no depth. And so it's unreasonable to believe those guys are going to play 17 games. Number two, tackling. And I don't want to pick on Sean Murphy Bunting. It wasn't just Sean Murphy Bunting, but the tackling from those guys and the Rams lost in the playoffs was hideous. Somebody teach these guys how to tackle. And I'm sorry, Pat Kerwin, you can teach freaking tackling without hitting. That's why you got tackling dummies. That's why you got coaches. Come on.
Tackling's a big problem, Steve. I don't even think they were particularly good at it during the championship season. With the exception of Levante David, who I think's a textbook tackler, they don't tackle well, Steve. They just don't. And Devin White's part of the problem. Besides his bad angles, he's not a wrap-up tackler. And the secondary, when I think Winfield's the best of the bunch back there in terms of run support, Steve, that's a problem. It's amazing that they have the rushing defense statistics that they compile when they don't tackle particularly well, and Dean's part of that group.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't think that they tackle that poorly. I mean, I'm not saying it's great, certainly from the cornerbacks. They've had their share of issues big time. But overall, I don't think it's horrible or anything like that. You wouldn't have the rushing numbers that you have if they didn't tackle pretty well. But one thing you mentioned about Rapone, I wasn't quite sure what Rapone was talking about exactly. I have to go back and listen to it, because yards per attempt, the Buccaneers ranked 15th in the league last year as a defense. So, yeah, that's middle of the pack. And so I wasn't quite sure where he was going with that. Maybe he had a different stat in mind or a certain down. When I heard that, I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't fly. And the numbers say it doesn't. So we'll leave it at that. But Rapone was, you know, he was very busy running his town hall, stepping away from the podium, addressing everybody and doing his thing. Ira, what did you think when he said, hey, we can't replace Jordan Whitehead? And even though Keanu Neal is a hitter, and he was a big-time top of the NFL hitter 3-4 years ago, we don't need those types of hits anymore. We just want to tackle. And that sort of made me cringe a little bit, because, you know, they're looking for those forced fumbles, those big hits. I mean, that was a big reason that Whitehead was a guy you could count on for a turnover here and there.
Steve, you're absolutely right. By the way, Rapone loves Whitehead. He loved him last year. He loves him even though he's a Jet now, playing for Robert Saleh. He loves the way that Whitehead was coming on, Lee, and he was coming on. And I don't know how much we can put into what Rapone was saying in terms of physicality. Lee, 2 points. Steve's right. That was Whitehead's calling card. And Whitehead was getting a lot better about laying these hits on without getting penalties. Whitehead was getting good at it. You know, that's not easy under these rules. And two, nobody ever called Keanu Neal a ball hawk. That's not his reputation. I mean, he was a darn good player in Atlanta. The question is, could he get back to that? That's why he was out there as a free agent, and nobody had picked him up until the Bucs called Lee. There's a lot of doubt whether he can, whether these injuries really robbed Keanu Neal of his calling card, which was being physical and being aggressive. So, Lee, I think that's what the Bucs are looking for from Neal. I wrote the other day, if Sue doesn't come back and there's no JPP and there's no Whitehead, where's the physicality, Lee, on this Buck defense? I don't see much. Do you really need it? Yeah, I think it's a nice element to have, and that's what Neal brings. So, you know, I wouldn't read too much into what Rapone's saying about Neal. He's no ball hawk.
I focus on the Bucks, so I can't comment about Neal. I never watched the Falcons. I don't watch the Cowboys. I know he went to Florida. That's right. And he's a first-round pick. He was hurt a lot. That's about all I know about the guy.
Right.
I personally applauded what Rapone said, not the fact he said he don't need physicality. I wanted to give him a standing ovation for his stressing tackling. That's the key core fundamental of defensive football. You can't tackle, it's going to be a long afternoon. That was my biggest issue with Lovie Smith, and I'm not going to be a fraud and say they need more physicality than they need tackling. They and every team need tackling. Get the ball back. Punting is a turnover too.
Sage, Todd Bowles was talking this week. He was talking on SiriusXM NFL Radio. He was talking to Colin Coward. Rashad White, the third round pick running back, was talking as well, and a phenomenal interview he did with the Jim Rome show. As Rome said to him at the end of the interview, he said, it's very, very rare that I'm going to take a sort of unknown rookie draft pick and keep him on for 15 minutes. You know, that guy was phenomenal, and he had a lot to say, and he's very, very interesting guy. But he was very clear, Ira, very clear, quote, I want to be the starting running back. And he was, talking about how he clearly is a student of the game. I thought it was interesting that he referred to, quote, Lenny. I don't think he's met Leonard Fournette yet, but I guess he feels comfortable calling him Lenny. And he said he's going to soak up a lot from him and learn from Giovanni Bernard. But he said, hey, number one, I'm a competitor. That's why I'm here. And I want that starting job. And I'll do a great job with it if I get the chance. What I thought was interesting is that he said Tom Brady hadn't reached out to him. And in past years, Brady would immediately text all the rookies, offensive side of the ball at least, let's get to work. But he hadn't heard from Brady. And his response was, well, yeah, Brady's busy. I'm busy too, though. So I'm getting ready and it's okay. But this guy's got a real different mentality from when Ronald Jones came into the league as a 20-year-old who was kind of immature. That was his reputation early on. And this guy seems very mentally ready for everything that's coming after him.
You're right, Steve. It was a hell of an interview. And I'm surprised, Jim Rome, he's got a big name. He could probably get a first-round pick, I'm sure, from some team to go on. And he picks this, the kid out of Arizona State. And it was refreshing to hear him talk. Smart, articulate, coming after Leonard Fournette. You don't hear guys that weren't picked on day one talk like that. The ninth pick in the draft could talk like that, but not a guy that wasn't necessarily a premium pick. He's coming at Fournette. Ultimately, Lee, I think the three of us say that if Fournette's not injured, this kid doesn't have much of a chance to unseat Fournette as the number one back. Lee, I like the attitude. I think he's going to have to wait his turn. I do. Bernard might, be in front of him in terms of being a third down back. And, Fournette's proven that he's back catching 76 passes like he did in Jacksonville. Now, Lee, here's where I might extend myself. Here's where I might get exposed. And I've been hitting around about this, and I'm going to continue to say it. Lee, this little thing about that he hasn't talked to Brady, I don't want to read too much into it. It's not a catastrophe. They're 2-3 months away from training camp. No big deal. But, Lee, isn't this another example, Mr. DeKemper? The latest example of Brady being a little distracted, of Brady being a little bit different than he's been in year one and year two in Tampa. I don't think it's cause for alarm, Lee. I'm not ringing any bells, but Brady's all over the joint, Lee. He's everywhere. He's everywhere on social media. He's absorbed in TB12. He's doing golf. He's doing this. And Lee, he looks a little bit less involved than he's been. Again, I'm not panicking, but this kind of fits a pattern here.
Well, I know he's doing a movie with Ruth Buzzy and a bunch of other 80-year-old hags. But outside of that, he's not really doing anything different than he did previous year. Didn't he do some dumb golf thing? I'm sorry to be redundant about golf, but didn't he do some dumb golf thing? And he obviously is always, TB12, that's his big thing. I know he's got people that work for him on social media. But outside of the 80-year-old hag movie, I don't think he's doing anything different. That's just me.
Well, Steve, this running back's the first offensive player that the Bucs drafted this year. First one on offense.
Well, no, they took the guard. They took the guard in the second round, Gedeke. But I know what you're saying, Ira. I mean, like you said, you're not sending out an alarm whistle. But it seems a little different from Brady. That he's not texting the guy. Let's effing go. And I know what you're saying.
Now he did. He did recruit Russell Gage. So he did, Lee, and we gotta point that out. He was a big factor in Gage landing with the Bucks. He was.
All right, now Ira, look, let me switch the tables here to the defense, and I've done a very good job avoiding a subject that is going to come up a little bit later, but I'm gonna switch it to Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, and so the Bucs paraded out their defensive coaches, as you saw, and we've talked a little bit about that. One of them is the new guy, Bob Sanders. And, of course, when Jim Caldwell left for the Jaguars defensive coordinator gig, they shuffled coaches a little bit, and then they hired Sanders to be the outside linebackers coach. And, of course, Bruce Arians didn't necessarily search the globe high and wide for the best available coach. He went with his 68-year-old buddy, who's got a lot of experience and brought him in here to coach the outside linebackers. But he was talking about Trajan Soyinka, and he basically said, you know, we got to get his mentality right where he's hunting on every pass rush. He needs the realization that every call Todd Bowles makes is for him. And that's a very nice way of saying, stop freaking loafing, even if it is just a few calls a game. You can't play in the NFL like that. And I had called him out for loafing a few times last year. I'm just glad they're coming out and saying it and sort of admitting that, hey, this guy, he's got a good motor, but you can't turn it off.
That's interesting, Steve. I thought his biggest flaw was he was obsessed with trying to get to the quarterback and fell a little short in terms of being a complete outside linebacker with the angles he was taking, maybe against the run. You did, Steve, you were the one that mentioned, you know, his effort could be better on certain plays. Lee, that's a little bit surprising for a first-round draft pick that's trying to carve out some action. Now, Lee played half the snap, so he did get his chances last year. Even though he was playing behind JPP, they played him in a variety of roles. Lavonne David said, you know, cut the kid a break. We asked him to do a lot of different things last year. I still think it's a good draft pick, but he's not close to being where he needs to be.
Rarely do rookie pass rushers make an impact, unless your last name's Bosa. It just rarely happens. I know the Bucs have big things for him, and it just smells like they're certainly expecting big things this year. You know, with JPP, it looks like he's gone. Sue, it doesn't look good. So I can say this about Joe Trajan. One, I know that the Bucs were very, very, very impressed that he didn't go back to the West Coast as soon as the season was over with. He stayed in Tampa the whole offseason working out with the team. And they were very impressed by that. Then he went to this famed pass rushing savant, this Svengali up at Michigan State, and he went to this guy's camp. But I saw pictures of Joe Trajan a week or so ago on his Instagram stories feed. He looks like a different guy. It almost scared me how much he bulked up. I'm like, dude, are you gonna, have you lost your quickness? Because, he looks like a different guy. He really does. And I'm just hoping that he hasn't lost his quickness by the way he's bulked up so much.
If he can make a huge difference, if he has a good season, it could go a long way to really bulking up this defense.
Oh, yeah. Look, they need him to be an eight-sack kind of starter. That's what they need.
Yes.
Ira, you went to a writing camp last week to sharpen up your skills up in Michigan, too, didn't you?
And I don't look like the same guy either, Steve. I don't look like the same guy. I'm svelte. You know, my verbs are well-rounded now, Stevie. I got my pronouns in order. I'm ready to bedazzle our audience.
I don't know about that crispy duck. That'll sit with you for a while, Ira, that crispy duck. Yeah. So Todd Bowles is on the radio. Lee wrote about it. He was also talking about how Rashad White, he's looking forward to him being a change of pace, that they haven't had that change of pace. I kind of thought Rojo was supposed to be the change of pace, even though he's more of a hammering kind of runner. Certainly, if you looked at 40 times, Rojo, I believe, was faster than Rashad White, but Todd Bowles is raving about his feet. So we'll see. We'll see what he really looks like at this level. But Bowles was talking to Colin Coward, and he was saying that, no. Coward was trying to imply that Tom Brady is running the show on offense, and Bowles pulled him back and said, no, it's Leftwich's deal, and in my spare time, I'm studying the offensive playbook, and on third and short, I'll be making the decision. And he said some other types of stuff, and he said, you know, he'll be deciding what to do in the 2-minute drill and quote those types of deals. And he said he relinquished very little power this time around with his coaching gig, not like he did with the Jets. And what do you think of that? On third and one, Todd Bowles is making the call.
You know, Steve, it's interesting. It's not the first time I've heard Bowles talk about this. He did a little bit at the Arians Foundation dinner a couple of weeks ago at Innisbrook. Lee, I think there's a couple of things at play here. One, after his experience with the Jets, where maybe he thought he delegated too much authority, Lee, as a first-time head coach, things have changed. This is his second time around. Lee, in Todd Bowles' mind, and I think the three of us agree. If he screws this up, he's not going to get another chance, Lee. No, those days are over. If this doesn't turn out well in Tampa, he's never going to get another shot as a head coach in the National Football League, and he knows it. So, Lee, along those lines, you know, while saying I'm not going to be the offensive coordinator, and he said it about six times, and we understand that. He's not going to step on Leftwich's toes every day. But at the same time, Lee, he wants to make it clear that he's in charge. He is in charge of players' times, who's starting, who's going in, how many snaps they're getting, what kind of, you know, and he's got a little input on their offense. There's a big gap between being the offensive coordinator and having a hands-off approach to the offense. He's not going to be hands-off on the offense, Lee. He wants to be involved. He's going to be in the meetings. He wants to have some input. And, Lee, when it comes to situational football, which wasn't exactly his forte with the Jets, he's going to be on top of it. He's going to be in charge. If they screw up, it's on him, Lee. He might as well have a voice in it. So I think he bristles a little bit, Lee, to any idea that he's going to stick to one side of the ball. Those days are over. He's the head coach now.
I'm torn by that. I like the fact that he's not ignoring one side of the ball. But Ira, outside of one time, I can never remember a defensive coach taking over an offensive team and that offense being as productive. I could be dead wrong. You know, George Seifert comes to mind with the 49ers as a guy that, you know, like, hey, I'm not, you guys do what you do. There's like half a dozen Hall of Famers on this offense. Just keep going. But generally, defensive coaches taking over an offensive team, that spooks me because they don't like taking chances. The Bucs were exceptional because they did take chances. And, you know, why not? You got Tom Brady. You've got Chris Godwin. You got Mike Evans. You got Gronk. That worries me. And I know we're way ahead of the game about picking season win totals for the Bucs. That will come in August. But that right. is something that's really sticking in my head, a major factor in picking a Bucs season win total.
Does it bother you that Bowles, in a new role, an expanded role, wants to be a voice on the other side of the ball in certain situations?
Of course, it doesn't bother me, but it doesn't mean they have to listen to him. So that's really what it comes down to: is are you a voice or are you making demands and overstepping? Lee, do you want Todd Bowles making the call? Like he said, I'll make the decision on third and short. Do you want Todd Bowles making the decision on third and short?
Well, if the head coach is making the decision, who is? Brian Glazer? Of course, I hope the head coach is making that call, but he's the head coach, so I totally understand that. I'm not saying he shouldn't. My worry is he going to pull the reins back on the offense?
Ira, what about you?
That's what I hope does not happen.
Ira, let me give you more of a scenario here. I should have been more direct with Lee on the scenario. Okay, it's second quarter. It's Bucks winning 13-6, and they're on their own 46-yard line. It's third and short. Don't you want Tom Brady and Byron Leftwich making that call, Ira? I don't know. I do.
Yes. And you had it in the right order. Brady and Leftwich. Steve, you had the order correct. Brady's Brady. I mean, there's only one of them. There's only ever been one of them. And he's seen every freaking defense. He's seen every scenario. I trust Tom Brady not only to make the call. Steve, I trust him on 4th-and-1 from midfield about whether to punt or not. And, Lee, you're right there with me, Lee. You don't have any problem with Brady being the biggest voice in the room on offensive strategy.
Absolutely not. If I'm Byron Leftwich, Monday is going over tape after the previous day's game. Tom, what do you want to do this week? And whatever Brady says, like, okay.
It took me back because 4th down, I understand, but 3rd and short, when you've got a Tom Brady and a Super Bowl offensive coordinator, I don't know if the head coach needs to be making that call. I don't know if I like that. But speaking of head coaching, Ira, One thing that, because again, we firmly believe, the three of us, that the loss of Bruce Arians is significant. Maybe that's just one game this season. Maybe it's two, but it's something that just gets glossed over, like, hey, Bruce is gone, whatever, high five. Bowles was asked, what's the biggest thing you learned from Arians, or what makes him stand out among the guys you've worked with, Andy Reid and Parcells and others? And he said, I thought it was interesting, he said that Arians' ability to coach the coaches, just to know exactly what to say before coaches even ask him a question, just his mastery of coaching coaches and setting them up for success and understanding their challenges sometimes before they even do, that he was just a master at that. It made me wonder, you know what? I get that Arians has a seasoned staff, and he was in more involved than a lot of people want to pretend he was last year, Arians, of course. But I wonder if some of these guys will look to Bowles for just the right thing to say, or they're expecting the coach to know what to tell them, and maybe it'll be different this time around. I don't know. It was pretty telling to me.
Steve, you're bringing up an important point, and a point that hasn't been elucidated, I don't think, enough in the time that Arians has stepped down in terms of being a consultant. And Lee, you brought it up a couple of times. Good for you, DeKemper. Of course, it's important. Let's not treat this like, you know, this is a step up. Arians is out of the picture. Who's Arians? He didn't do much. He delegated. He ran around on a cart. Who needs it? You know, the coaches are still in place, Lee, by and large, the staff. Lee, I'm not buying it. Bruce Arians was not a passenger on this flight, Lee. He was not. He was an integral part of it. And I didn't even think of this particular point that Steve's mentioned, that Bowles talked about, in terms of the interaction between Arians and his hand-picked staff. We got a lot of faith in this staff, Lee, and they're not going to fall on their ass just because Arians is now not in charge, Lee. We're not saying that. But there is going to be a little bit of a fallout. Arians is not going to be nearly as involved, Lee. Let's not be naive. He's not. He's not the guy in charge. Bowles is. Arians isn't. He's right there with Tom Moore now as a consultant. And Moore's got he's got 13 years on Moore, so he's the junior consultant, Lee. But there's going to be some drop off with Arians out of the picture on a daily basis, and I think Buck fans have to acknowledge that.
I agree with you, Ira, and you've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. We also see it on clips from NFL films and clips on Buccaneers.com. Arians, and you hear this about the very best coaches, Arians seemed to know innately. He knew when to pat a guy on the back and when to put a foot in between his backside cheeks. And that's an art. That's really an art. And I think that's going to be missed. And I was the example I used is the very first preseason game in 2019, when Sean Murphy Bunting didn't have a good first preseason game with the Bucks. Arians walked up to him and goes, "Where were you?" I thought that was a great line. We drafted you for a reason. Let's see it. And I've seen clips of him with Rojo. And, you know, we all heard about how Rojo had a confidence issue. And the way he coached with him was perfect. That doesn't mean that he gave Rojo a pass. He'd jump on Rojo when he needed it. But that's just an art with really, really good coaches. They know when to pat a guy in the back and give him support. And they know when they need to motivate him. They know when they need to get chewed out. And that's gone now. And I think that's going to be missing.
And Steve, along those lines with the talking about Parcells a little bit and his approach, Arians, you know, we know about Parcells and what he did to Phil Sims and treated Sims like a rag doll on occasion. And this guy was kind of the face of the Giants franchise. Steve, people were kind of shocked. A lot of people were when Arians wouldn't alibi for Brady having a bad day. And it didn't happen very frequently, you know, in these two seasons. It didn't, because Brady's Brady. And it shows the adjustment, because, Steve, I used to bristle that Arians would, what I call, excuse Jameis Winston, his gaffes in 2019 until the end, until the very end, until the last two games, and then it changed. But up till then, you know, hey, the receiver ran the wrong pattern. You know, don't blame Jameis. Steve, here he's taking on Tom Brady, and I'm not sure we're going to see that out of Todd Bowles.
Ira, I'll lay money. This is old Bobby Nitrick. I'll lay money. Arians told Brady, you know what, I'm gonna unload on you sometimes because I want to motivate these guys. If I unload on you, they're going like, holy smokes, you're killing Tom Brady. I better get my rear-ending gear. That's a classic Bobby Knight move.
It's kind of like the way you used to scream at Anwar Richardson, Ira, years ago.
Yeah, but he wasn't the best player. He wasn't the best player.
Sage, the more I read about this tight end, the fourth-round tight end, Cade Otton, and watching more film on him and just reading various angles on this guy, and I'm starting to think that, you know what, obviously Gronk is in no rush to come back, and he'll probably be there for training camp. And Cameron Brate's going into his ninth season, and while he says he's healthier than he's been in 6 years, he said that right before Bruce Arians' golf tournament. There's no reason that they need to wear out Cameron Brate in the summer. They know what he has to offer and that he's had some issues before. So this guy, Otton, may get a ton of work in the summer work and even first team work. And, you know, I'm starting to think he might be a guy that gets a lot more opportunity, at least, than some other people. And apparently he's versatile, that he can block and he can catch and get open. And Rick Spielman, the former Vikings GM and the Dolphins GM, was on CBS the other day saying he thought he's really right there as the top do-it-all tight end in the draft.
Steve, you're absolutely right about Otton. The more you think about it, Lee, at the very worst, Lee, he's 1 year away from being the starting tight end of the Bucs, you would think.
Possibly.
Yeah. Look, my Gronk meter is about, you know, 88% that he's coming back. But it's not 100, Lee, because you never know. You never know.
Yeah.
But Steve's right. They're going to wear out Otton in training camp. They are. In OTAs, in rookie, you know, mini camp. He's going to get every opportunity to show what he's got. And Lee, in some ways, he might be more well-rounded as a prospect than Trey McBride. I think McBride is considered widely to be the more polished receiver than Otton. But, you know, Otton might be a more complete tight end prospect at this point. And he's got a real chance, Lee. He's got a real chance. Brate is Brate. You know, a good backup, a good reserve, Lee. I mean, Brate is not going to be the starting tight end for the Bucs in 2023. Lee, that's not going to happen.
He may not even be on the team.
Yeah. So, you know, and Gronk's probably not going to be on the team because Brady won't be here. So
yeah, I think Gronk's done it.
I think Steve's focus on Otton is right on.
Yeah.
You know, now look, he wasn't a first-round pick. And he wasn't a second-round pick for a reason. He's not completely polished. This kid's got a real chance, Lee.
I know some Bucs fans whine about Brate because he's not the stereotypical tight end. He's not a blocker. He'll never be a blocker. That's not his game. But I always, when I hear people whine about Brate, I think of the famous Bill Belichick quote. Don't tell me what a guy can't do. Tell me what he can do. And we'll utilize that. Well, Brate can get open short and medium. Brate can generally catch the ball. So Brate is effective. Brate is a weapon, but he just can't block. So, hello, you don't ask him to block. It's real simple. And so I like Brate, and I'm not, I'm not shoveling dirt on him quite yet. But what's he got, 1 year left on his contract? I would be a bit surprised if he's back in 2023, a bit.
All right, Ira, before we get to a topic that we're going to end with, which is going to be quite feisty here, I got to remind everybody of two things. One, Big Storm Beer, make it yours. Big Storm Beer, try it. Try a different variety. Check them all out at bigstormbrewery.com. But also, Ira, you know, the Bucks are playing in Germany. It's been announced Sunday, November 13th, 9:30 in the morning against the Seahawks. And I'm pretty sure we're going to finalize all the dates by June when the full schedule comes out. But I think we're going to do a breakfast at Big Storm in Clearwater. They're going to roll out their Blood Brothers brand. A lot of people have heard of that. Blood Brothers is their Bloody Mary mix that's so popular. And just have a grand old time there with fans and do it right. So I'm excited about that. And also, of course, Ira, you drive a 2020 Cherry Red Ford Escape, which you got from Bill Curry Ford. You love that thing, and that's where you go for service. That's where you go for body work. I know you don't have any accidents, but it's where I go for body work, and they're fantastic there. Order a new vehicle. Check out all of the great incentives that we talked about at the beginning of the podcast at BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan, host of the Best in Class podcast at Joe Bucks Fan and out on the platforms. He's going to help you personally with whatever you need at Bill Curry Ford. And as we heard before, Ira, storm season is upon us. Vacation season is here. If you go away and you come back to a flood, you have to know who to call. That's Florida's Elite Restoration. If you find mold because your air conditioning was off for 2 weeks, it was broken, you didn't know about it, this is who you need to call 24/7 because your insurance company, they expect you to attack this stuff immediately. And if not, they might deny a claim. That's how you have to proceed. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Sage. All right, look, Lee wrote about this. I wrote about this. And this has been in my craw for a long time, Ira. Casey Rogers stepped to the podium. He's the Buccaneers defensive line coach. He's also the co-defensive coordinator, but he's the big boss of the D-line. And not the outside linebackers, the defensive line. That means he has been in charge since he got here of developing Vita Vea. He knows everything about Vita Vea. And, of course, he was asked about Vita Vea's snap counts. And he went on, he said, Vita, I want to say he was averaging anywhere from 42 to 50 snaps a game last year. And that's kind of really how it needs to be. We're on Vita about possibly getting his conditioning a little better so he can play more. Well, Ira, that's all very nice, except averaging between 42 and 50 snaps a game, Vita did not break 40 snaps a game in his final 10 games. Didn't break 40.
Not once.
So even
really?
Yeah. So, and I'm including the playoffs on those. So even before Vita was banged up in midseason, Ira, before he was hurt, he had four games in which he played less than 35 defensive snaps. So his coach doesn't know how much he's on the field. His coach is saying, well, the guy needs to get in better shape. He's a veteran. He's got a big contract. He's got fitness gurus all around him, including Ndamukong Suh, his great friend, who's been an amazing guy at staying healthy and fit at playing till 35 years old. He's got Tom Brady there. What's going on here, Ira?
Steve, let's state the obvious. Isbitz has been obsessed with this topic for about 2 years.
Oh, yeah,
Lee. Obsessed. And he's not necessarily wrong.
No.
And Steve, look at it this way. If Sue doesn't come back, and now my meter might be dipping below 50% on that, and if Sue doesn't come back, I think they need Vea even more because they've got an unproven draft pick, and Will Golston, you know, and Nunez Roaches. I mean, I got to have Vita Vea in there, 65, 70% of the snaps, Lee, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. The one thing Casey Rogers does say is that we chart Vita's effectiveness, and there's a big drop-off once he gets past the 35 snaps. We haven't heard that from Casey Rogers. So in the absence of hearing that, what are we to believe? That he's out of shape. Now, I don't want the guy dropping 20 pounds, Lee, because I think his bulk is part of what makes him so effective. But, Lee, it's hard to argue with Isbitt's main point. This guy, he's a first-round draft pick. If Sue doesn't come back, he's unquestionably your best defensive lineman until we see what this rookie can do. And you want him in on more than 35 snaps, Lee. I mean, you can't argue with Isbitt's point.
Casey Rogers was all over the map the other day. Now, I really believe Casey Rogers was honestly guessing at his snap counts. Because if you go back, I mean, I was there. And if you go back and look at the video, you can see him sigh and he kind of looks up. He does a Jason Light move. He looks at the ceiling and he's like, I want to say. So I think he was guessing at that. But he was all over the map. Just two clarifications. Steve was absolutely right about he didn't break 40 snaps in the last 10 games. But he did have 40 snaps. He just didn't break 40 snaps.
Right.
And the last 10 games, I want to make sure people know Steve's including playoffs, because he did, you know, like his ninth last game of the season, he did have a bunch of snaps. But, you know, Rodgers was insinuating that he was still bothered by his broken ankle from the previous year. Well, he sure, you know, and Casey Rodgers saying, oh, he had rust. Where was this rust in the playoffs in 2020? I didn't see any rust. And he was manhandling Corey Linsley with the Packers, so I didn't see any rust there. And, you know, then like I said, he was insinuating his ankle was still bothering him. Hell, he had 54 and 661 snaps in games the first half of the season. So what's going on here? Now, he did have a knee injury, which he missed a game for. And after that knee injury, his sack numbers went down. So maybe it was the knee injury. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But it's hard for me to believe he was still bothered by an ankle when he was putting up a lot of snaps early in the season. So I don't know, he was all over the map, and I didn't understand it. It didn't add up. But yes, via snap counts need to be better. Why that was, I don't know. I don't know if it was injury. I don't know if it was conditioning. But if it was conditioning, that's a problem with me. Why weren't you in condition? Now, if you weren't in condition because your knee was hurt and your ankle was hurt, I get that. But say it. Don't let this linger. Conditioning. You mean you weren't working out? Why weren't you working out? You know, just say it. If it was because you had a bum knee, okay, I get it. It's understandable. If it was because you had a screwed up ankle, okay, I get it. It's understandable. But what Casey Rodgers was saying didn't make a – just didn't add up.
I'm going to take it a step further. And, you know, Casey Rodgers probably listens to this podcast because so many people do it one buck place.
And I like him because this guy gets results. Everywhere he's been, he gets results. I like Casey Rodgers.
And Steve, if that's the case, then I will see – I will be in Mr. Rodgers' neighborhood during training camp. And he thinks the following point that I'm about to make is bits, and I don't think you can disagree with me, Steve. I really don't. Instead of looking at the ceiling when discussing – the snap counts for Vita Vea and making some nebulous, you know, I think he was about this. Steve, let me be very clear about this. He knew, or he should absolutely have known exactly, and I mean exactly, how much Vita Vea played last season. And I think he did. I think he knew it to the exact number, the average, the snaps. There's no guesswork, Steve. This is his job. And I don't believe he was quite unsure about how much Vita Vea played. I think he knew exactly. Exactly.
You know, people think Steve and I are making too big of a deal about the snap counts. I bet you the Glazers want to know why they're paying full-time money for a part-time player.
I just want the best guy on the field. And everybody keeps running around saying this guy's Pro Bowl material. Heck, he was at the Pro Bowl. Well, that's a guy that you want to find a way to get him on the field for another series, right? I mean, that's valuable stuff. That's impact to the team. And is he just too fat? Is that just the situation? I mean, Tristan Wirfs is out there every snap. He is 6'5", 350 pounds. Vita is 6'4". I don't know. Is he close to 370, 360? I don't know what he is. But if he's out of shape, it's not acceptable. When we're sitting here just trying to get better as a team, they spend millions and millions of dollars trying to add talent and to scout players and to manipulate the salary cap and to get the right guys in here. One way to get better would just to be to get Vita on the field another six plays a game. And I hope they figure that out to get in his head.
Lee, one more quick point, Lee. And the Bucks are very smart about this, Lee. They put a lot of resources into it. The Bucks are cutting edge. They got these people. And they use all these modern technology, the techniques. And in that regard, let's squeeze another 10 snaps out of Vita Vea.
They're getting readings on all kinds of stuff. Heart rate, blood pressure, you name it. They're getting all these readings. So they know right away when a guy is starting to burn out or not, get exhausted. Real quick about snap counts. If Mike Evans or Lavonte David were only playing 30 snaps a game, people would be up in arms.
Sage, and I don't want to go here, but at some point, you got to bring this back to Vita Vea, who everybody agrees is a team-first guy. that he's played through injuries. He's well-liked, and he's a good player, and he battled back in 2020 after an injury that would have cost most guys their season. He kept grinding and grinding and came back. But at some point, doesn't he want to say, look, what do I need to do to play more? Because we are always told, what do guys want to do? They just want to play more. They don't want to come off the field. So it's just a little wacky, Sage.
Steve, one more point when you mentioned Tristan Wirfs on the field for 100% of the snaps. A right tackle is usually absorbing punishment, and Vita Vea should be doling out punishment. So in that respect, it's even more stunning that Wirfs doesn't get a breather, and this guy gets all kinds of breathers.
To dial things back 20 minutes or so, you know, we were talking about Joe Tryon and, you know, getting some extra edge rush. From what I understand, the Bucs believe, and this is related to Vea here, the Bucs believe if they can get more of a pass rush from the interior, which means collapsing the pocket, that will help out Shaq and Joe Tryon. And I think we saw evidence of that in the playoffs a couple of years ago when Vea came back from his broken ankle and he was manhandling Corey Linsley, the all-pro center for the Packers. And Shaq, let's put it this way, Shaq was hunting, as they like to say. Shaq was hunting.
Well, it's something to watch, Ira. I hope they find a way to do it. And just to get Vea out there a little bit more. I mean, what's the worst that'll happen? I guess they're worried about him getting injured if he plays too much. You would think somewhere somebody might say, well, 80% Vea is better than 90% Steve McClendon, but I guess not.
Steve, let me say this, Steve. You guys got too much pride to say it, but I don't have pride, the Kemper, so I'll say it. The last 15 minutes of this podcast, which included an even-handed, down-the-line treatment of a Buck subject without any rancor, but trying to be objective about it. Gentlemen, you're not going to hear anything like this anywhere else. You're not going to hear it. What you're going to hear on these other podcasts that are involved and touching on all things Buccaneers is sycophants that only want to talk about what the Bucs do well, and they do a lot of damn things well when you win 29 games in the last two seasons and a Super Bowl. But guys, not everything is rosy. Not everything. And we do better when the Bucs do better. Nobody's rooting for the Bucs to fail here. But you're just not going to get this kind of honesty, Steve, anywhere else. You're not.
Well, that's nice of you, Sage. We just call it as it is, and every day is a new day. And it still eats in my craw, Sage. This all comes back to the Rams loss, a game the Bucs shouldn't have lost. Maybe if Vita Vea is out there more, maybe it doesn't happen. And I look at Aaron Donald. He played every snap, 72 snaps in that game. And the guy next to him, the nose tackle, Greg Gaines, who Vita went to college with, played net alongside. He played 70 snaps against the Bucs in the biggest game of the year. Vita's playing in the 30s. You know, I think it might have cost him that game. And I hate seeing that, and drives me insane, Ira.
Our poker game is coming up this weekend. Three couples, Steve. Three couples, a little Texas Hold'em. You can't win too much. You can't lose too much. Potluck dinner. Everybody brings something. I'm bringing a plate of mashed yeast because I'm on a diet, gentlemen.
Yeast.
With a side helping of vegetables. You know, you got to sit at the right seat, Steve. You got to sit at the right seat because if anybody's played Texas Hold'em, you get two hold cards. And if you get a 7 and a 3 unsuited, Steve, throw your cards in, and it's like the Bucs playing without Vita Vea. Throw your cards in.
I got to get this straight out here. Let me see if I get this straight. You're in like a club of some sort where you play poker once every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, go to someone's home. But when you're in Vegas, you didn't spend a nickel on gambling.
I'm not giving those damn Bellagio people a dime over there at the Kemper. Not a dime. By the way, I was watching the draft and, you know, in front of the Bellagio fountains, Lee, and I was looking for my room on the 17th floor. I wanted to see if anybody was looking out the window of our room from a couple of months ago, courtesy of Joe Bucs fan.
Ira, I can just see, you know, everybody's chips are in. Your wife doesn't have much left in front of her, and she offers to put all of your Oreo cookies into the pot. and you give her the death stare, and she loses, and you don't talk to her for a week.